The princess, who had remained inconsolable at being parted from her husband, had, ever since their cruel separation, lived in great neglect of her person. She had almost forgotten the neatness so becoming persons of her sex and quality, particularly after the first time the magician paid her a visit, and she had understood by some of the women who knew him again that it was he who had taken the old lamp in exchange for a new one. However, the opportunity of taking the revenge he deserved made her resolve to gratify Aladdin. As soon, therefore, as he was gone, she sat down to dress, and was attired by her women to the best advantage in the richest habit of her wardrobe. Her girdle was of the finest and largest diamonds set in gold, her necklace of pearls, six on a side, so well proportioned to that in the middle, which was the largest ever seen, that the greatest sultanesses would have been proud to have been adorned with only two of the smallest. Her bracelets, which were of diamonds and rubies intermixed, corresponded admirably to the richness of the girdle and necklace. When the Princess Badroulboudour was completely dressed, she consulted her glass and women upon her adjustment, and when she found she wanted no charms to flatter the foolish passion of the African magician, she sat down on a sofa expecting his arrival. The magician came at the usual hour, and as soon as he entered the great hall where the princess waited to receive him, she rose with an enchanting grace and smile, and pointed with her hand to the most honourable place, waiting till he sat down, that she might sit at the same time, which was a civility she had never shown him before. The African magician, dazzled more with the lustre of the princess's eyes than the glittering of her jewels, was much surprised. The smiling air with which she received him, so opposite to her former behaviour, quite fascinated his heart. When he was seated, the princess, to free him from his embarrassment, broke silence first, looking at him all the time in such a manner as to make him believe that he was not so odious to her as she had given him to understand hitherto, and said, "You are doubtless amazed to find me so much altered today. But your surprise will not be so great when I acquaint you that I am naturally of a disposition so opposite to melancholy and grief that I always strive to put them as far away as possible when I find the subject of them is past. I have reflected on what you told me of Aladdin's fate, and know my father's temper so well that I am persuaded, with you, he could not escape the terrible effects of the Sultan's rage. Therefore, should I continue to lament him all my life, my tears cannot recall him. For this reason, since I have paid all the duties decency requires of me to his memory, now he is in the grave, I think I ought to endeavour to comfort myself. These are the motives of the change you see in me. I am resolved to banish melancholy entirely, and persuaded that you will bear me company tonight, I have ordered a supper to be prepared. But as I have no wines but those of China, I have a great desire to taste of the produce of Africa, and doubt not you're producing some of the best." The African magician, who had looked upon the happiness of getting so soon and so easily into the Princess Badroulboudour's good graces as impossible, could not think of words expressive enough to testify how sensible he was of her favours. But to put an end the sooner to a conversation which would have embarrassed him if he had engaged farther in it, he turned it upon the wines of Africa, and said, "Of all the advantages Africa can boast, that of producing the most excellent wines is one of the principal. I have a vessel of 7 years old which has never been broached, and it is indeed not praising it too much to say it is the finest wine in the world. If my princess," added he, "will give me leave, I will go and fetch 2 bottles, and return again immediately."
"I should be sorry to give you that trouble," replied the princess. "You had better send for them."
"It is necessary I should go myself," answered the African magician, "for nobody but myself knows where the key of the cellar is laid, or has the secret to unlock the door."
"If it be so," said the princess, "make haste back, for the longer you stay, the greater will be my impatience, and we shall sit down to supper as soon as you return."
The African magician, full of hopes of his expected happiness, rather flew than ran, and returned quickly with the wine. The princess, not doubting but he would make haste, put with her own hand the powder Aladdin had given her into the cup set apart for that purpose. They sat down at the table opposite to each other, the magician's back toward the buffet. The princess presented him with the best at the table, and said to him, "If you please, I will entertain you with a concert of vocal and instrumental music. But as we are only two, I think conversation may be more agreeable." This the magician took as a new favour. After they had eaten some time, the princess called for some wine, drank the magician's health, and afterward said to him, "Indeed, you had a full right to commend your wine, since I never tasted any so delicious."
"Charming princess," said he, holding in his hand the cup which had been presented to him, "my wine becomes more exquisite by your approbation."
"Then drink my health," replied the princess. "You will find I understand wines." He drank the princess's health, and returning the cup, said,
"I think myself fortunate, princess, that I reserved this wine for so happy an occasion, and own I never before drank any in every respect so excellent."
When they had each drunk two or three cups more, the princess, who had completely charmed the African magician by her obliging behaviour, gave the signal to the slave, who served them with wine, bidding her bring the cup which had been filled for herself, and at the same time bring the magician a full goblet. When they both had their cups in their hands, she said to him, "I know not how you express your love in these parts when drinking together. With us in China, lovers reciprocally exchange cups and drink each other's health." At the same time she presented to him the cup which was in her hand, and held out her hand to receive his. He hastened to make the exchange with the more pleasure, because he looked upon this favour as a token of conquest over the princess, which raised his rapture to the highest pitch. Before he drank, he said to her, with the cup in his hand,
"Indeed, princess, we Africans are not so refined in the art of love as you Chinese, and your instructing me in a lesson I was ignorant of informs me how sensible I ought to be of the favours done me. I shall never, lovely princess, forget my recovering, by drinking out of your cup, that life which your cruelty, had it continued, must have made me despair of."
The princess, who began to be tired with his declarations, interrupted him and said,
"Let us drink first, and then say what you will afterward."
At the same time she set the cup to her lips, while the African magician, who was eager to get his wine off first, drank up the very last drop. In finishing it, he leaned his head back to show his eagerness, and remained some time in that state. The princess kept the cup at her lips till she saw his eyes turn in his head, when he fell backward, lifeless, on the sofa.